Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Help for HD Live, the first podcast created for families living with Huntington's and juvenile Huntington's disease. Don't forget to find us on iTunes, Blog Talk, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. You can also search over 500 archived episodes and other projects at helpforhd.org. To watch us in person, find Help for HD TV on YouTube and subscribe and ring the bell for notifications on new content. Help for HD Live is going on air in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in to Help for HD Live. This program is made possible because of Teva Pharmaceuticals, Neurocrine Biosciences, and the Griffin Foundation. I'm your host, Lauren Holder, and today I have a special show for you. If you did not get to attend the Help for HD symposium in D.C. or near Washington, D.C., we did a very special panel at the very end about lived experience. And so I have that recording, and that is going to be our show today because I think it was so good. And I really wanted to share it with everybody. So I hope you guys enjoy. And if I don't get to say anything else, then I will talk to you guys next week. But enjoy this recording of the lived experience panel from Help for HD Symposium. Thanks, guys.
Let's start with DJ. How have your relationships changed with your longtime friends since HD entered your life? And with those changes, how have you protected your mental health?
So, as everybody knows, with HD, it's a scary road. People who are emotionally attached to you can be scared away by HD. They don't want to see somebody that they love deteriorate and advance into late stage HD. So we've lost a lot. We've lost a lot of friends. We've lost a lot of family. However, we've also gained a lot. Coming to events like this are life-changing. That's also how we protect our mental health. There's our caregiver group, we support each other, we're there for each other. It's only once a week. Sometimes we don't make it, but we always have a chat that, if we have any issues and we want support, we can reach out to everybody in our group. Everybody here has been open to being there for one another and loving one another, and It's moving.
With both of you growing up in families impacted by HD, do you find a lot of your conversations are wrapped up around HD? How do you find balance when you know some of you may be getting too pulled into HD? How do you pull them out?
I think that it is, in a way, not that every single conversation is about HD, but every conversation is about HD. We both have family impacted, and we have family members who are progressing that we're actively or indirectly caregiving for. So part of our relationship has been communication first and foremost, and making sure that we're finding a balance where we can still have our time and our relationship and be able to buy a house and get married and start a family and do all those fun things, but also realizing that HD is just part of our life. It's not something that we can ignore. We kind of have to face it head on. So it's only natural that all of our conversations also incorporate HD into it and what that looks like for our future. But also, Erica has been good at reminding me to really stay in the moment. So we also have that balance as well.
Yeah, we're just but it's really cool to go at the same time because we're on that same level that we go, what are we doing for the community? What are we doing? feeling from the community, and at the same time, we have tried to work at being intentional with our time, both kind of good and bad. We're cutting things off, we're watching these movies tonight, we're going on a date, we're going to do other things, we're going to go hang out with friends, and have to kind of remind ourselves that, you know, even if we may feel guilty in some ways, okay, we might not be able to put as much attention on a loved one after the flight for that week, for that time period. It's like we still love and care for our loved ones, but it can't be 130%. We have to take care of ourselves. We have to support each other. And we do have to like be intentional with times of going, we're going to talk about these things. We've got to also enjoy life for us, so we can also maintain a good strong foundation to continue this conversation and continue to be strong caregivers for others.
Lauren, we know HD burnout is real. What do you do when you need a mental health rest from HD?
I think this is a really tough one because we're in a pivotal moment right now with HD. Especially as we have this FDA meeting coming up. As I've been part of the global HD community and started learning about global issues, if you realize that locally we are at a pivotal point with HD. And so taking a mental health break for me looks very different right now than hopefully it will in the future. I think I take those moments now in maybe hour breaks instead of week breaks, and making sure that my time is very intentional with my kids and enjoying those moments with my children, kind of disconnecting a little bit in those moments. But realizing, just as Erica and Melissa said, HD is part of my life. And I'm more than just mom, I'm more than all of those things. And right now in a pivotal moment, I have a community that needs me to step up. And so I take on that responsibility.
Hi, this is
Angel. Living with children at risk, how do you support them through their thoughts on testing? Do you and Jessica have a plan on how you will support them when that day comes?
So we're actually dealing with a lot of that right now. Our second oldest has decided that he would like to be tested. And without Help for HD and HD Genetics, we wouldn't know where to turn. But we have that support. We're here. And it's because of you guys, we know how to deal with it. So we tell him that we're there for him. We respect his decisions and we want to support him through it. He knows who to call. He knows who to be in contact with. He knows where to go if he wants to game over HD. He's getting involved and he's enjoying it, and he feels all the support that he needs is there and available for him. And I'm very grateful. So is my wife.
Melissa, we often hear that people walking through their testing process often feel lost and almost like they have lost their identity and don't know where they belong once they test negatively. Do you have survivor's guilt or feel different than you expected when you tested negative? What have you done in the community to still have a purpose, to still be involved, and to still play an important role that our subpopulation negative plays within our community?
Yes. I think survivors go to the complicated terms, unmarked box, which is something we want and so it's inside. Like there's a lot of things that way. And from time to time I open that box. I think that there's this expectation that like you test and you find out it's like the week after you're walling and surviving a build and then you're ready to go.
Definitely not the case. I think it's 50 worse. Well, is there two places that have to happen? And I hope it goes in ways. I think that, especially seeing the family members progress, it's hard. We really worked really hard on a space to be able to talk about survivor skills, but we feel that we're talking about that because we should be doing that as a part of the I think that's something I really struggled with because growing up and mom started to be probably where I was taking care of my pieces. My issues and my home skills. I'm grateful that I don't have HD, and it's because I continue to fight for all the people, not only in my life, but in my family, in my Ohana that I've created and met. And whether it's advocating, you know, my time spent on MMA board or volunteering with HDSA, Asian Reach, running a marathon, it was really hard. I cried the entire time, but I was like crying because. You know, I kept telling myself, like, there's so many people that can't do this, and that's the reason I need to do this, and I need to speak up for people who don't have a voice. So that's how it
works. Yeah.
Symptom pain. Do you find yourself symptom pain? Do you find other Do you find other people's symptoms and tell you their thoughts? What is a strategy you have found that helps you with symptom planning?
I think it's very normal to symptom planning, whether you are the person at risk or a loved one. It's a very normal response to want to sit there and kind of sit there and want to be prepared, right? You want to make sure that you know. I don't have a lot of people in my life who symptom hunt for me. Or if I do have people, I discuss them and whether or not I am comfortable with that person addressing me about it or not. Because personally, I would only feel comfortable enough with specific people coming to me and saying, hey, I'm seeing this person, just anybody. And that's just because of how my support system is currently. As far as myself goes, yes, early on I did a lot of symptom pain. And the best thing that I ever did for myself is when I was 29 years old, I went and got baseline neurocognitive testing. So that way I would know when there were changes. And it put my mind at ease getting that testing, having that baseline, knowing I didn't have any deficits. And then it really benefited me in October of 2022 when I did the neurocognitive testing again because I was experiencing a decline. They were actually able to see what I was seeing. And so for me, that has eased my mind. Doing that baseline test truly made it so much easier not to go through that constant symptom.
Have you experienced any symptoms? Those you have been tested, and clearly you're not symptomatic. How do you protect yourself from people like that? And what advice would you give someone diagnosed or living with this? When you think people bring them what they think they're seeing?
Yeah, so kind of what Lauren mentioned, like typically it's just right, like if you have, if it's a genetic illness, it's, you know, when our hearing has that genetic illness, you know, at risk for hearing damage. and then it's just kind of like, well, this is something tests, and if you're still tested, you still have to kind of sleep, right? So, and especially for people who grow up in patient households, like my grandma was symptomatic from my birth, and seeing her get angry and seeing my mom, she loved it, get angry. Like, listen, it could be a bad grade, and then mom got even like, it's probably the best stuff with like institution. As a teenager, going must be interesting. And it's like, that just kind of becomes a bit of work in ways. But I feel like as I've gotten older, there's become a much more comfortable space of like being in this new status for me. And so symptomatic itself, it really isn't something that I think about often. It's a literally work in space. Well, don't go to bed thinking about it, don't wake up thinking about it. I talk to people about genetic testing and, you know, what and help them through that. But that's not something that like, I haven't been really thinking about myself to be mom. Just I'm fortunate that that hasn't really been my case. But I do still, you know, I still do it occasionally, but I found out like grounding myself and kind of reflecting on like who am I? You know, so I was diagnosed ADHD in my early 20s, right? And I'm like, well, so do I have up in the top, you in the bottom, and I'm like, all right, let's do it. And you know, I look at them, I'm overwhelmed. There's so much to do, but I start, and then I see the stone, and I'm like, you know, I'm gonna start here, and then probably like 10 months later, I'm still in the stove and tearing it apart, and that's gonna be the best looking stove on the planet. And then I'll start putting the rest out. And I think it's easy to go, like, okay, I fixated on something because I have a fixation, like something that happens in the G, like it's, you know, I'm unorganized, so it's like, this is this organization. And it could be the slippery slope, but then I go, okay. But in high school or college, when I think about it, it took me 2 days to clean my room. I find my little box in the back of the closet that I always forget every year, and it's just junk. And I fall into it, and I slip up in the room. Right. And so I think having that to kind of balance me out of like, no, this is what I will do. I just need to adjust where and how I'm moving. That has really let me and allowed me to kind of let go of some of those feelings of that. And when it comes to like other people, you know, I've been fortunate that I don't have necessarily to my face people that are necessarily symptomatic, but I do find people are curious. And I think the biggest tool that you can use is education. And education on like complexities of testing, like for each individual, right? We're here as a family because of the issue, but we each individually have traumas, beliefs, different cultures, we come from different lifestyles. And so I find that helping people locate the correct education around HD symptoms in general and things like that can help people understand. And if they still know that that's, you know, they still want to make comments about symptoms that may not be, you know, they feel uncomfortable, it's a piece of balance. But also creating your support services, your network and trust, like Lauren mentions, of who has kind of known you, who knows your core, who knows how you've been, and you kind of like sit you down and go, okay, this is out of character for you. This is something that is very different than who you kind of always have and what you've dealt with. You also got on, you're very upset. That is very upsetting, but you know, but to the credit card, so purchasing things will be tougher. That is very encouraging. And I want her to come and go, this is where this is down, we need to talk about this. So,
is that a warning?
Anyways, and so, and But when I'm I can go all day with this, but protecting your mental health is priority. So at the end of the day, your mental health is priority. If you're thinking about your system day in day night, seek the right counsel, nonprofits, therapists, like people who are educated in HD. If you feel like it's not, I mean, that's up to you. But something you do is getting people that understand you and then love you, but it's themselves. And if your mental health, HD or not, your priority.
DJ, walking through the testing process with Jessica, how did you support her when she received the results? And what are some things, and you know it's a lot, so just a couple top things on the top of your mind that you have done to support her throughout her journey?
So, long story short, with the testing, it was a crazy crap show. We went to the wrong place. We had the wrong supports in place. Actually, we didn't feel like we had any supports in place. They washed her blood sample. They were very rude. It took three times as long as they told us it would take. And she was very anxious and almost in a self-destructive mode, psychologically, while all of that was going on. So, afterwards, we figured out that we need to find some supports. We need to find a system that works for us. And, you know, it was very important to anybody that we talked to afterwards, please seek the proper counsel before getting tested. Make sure you go to the right testing sites. You know, get the care that you need. But that aside, Jessica's had a long journey so far, and you know, we've made sure that we can stop and enjoy life during her journey. And you know, we try to travel a lot because she loves to travel, she loves to see new sites. We decided to start a bucket list, and she started doing things on that bucket list. So, you know, got her on a Harley. We ended up buying one because she loved it. She was definitely afraid of it before you. Got her out parasailing. Recently got her to the summit of Loon Mountain, where she was able to take her scooter around on the summit and see all the views from the summit of Loon Mountain in New Hampshire. Just living life, because as you guys like me to say, a quote that we found is, fear does not stop death, it stops life. And we've lived by that quote since we found it, and we just try to find every adventure that we can find, you know, make any adaptations we need to make to the house. Recently, I've remodeled my bathroom to make sure that she can have comfort and safety while bathing. And that was just done prior to that was 2020. We put a huge tub in and we had to take the wall out to put in there. But she didn't feel safe with that tub. So that tub got a Sawzall to it. And she got a walk-in tub installed just recently. So whatever you got to do, you know, things don't matter. Life does. So enjoy life. Do what you need to do to be able to enjoy life. And live life to the fullest.
Make sure that we are always in the future. Thanks, Maggie, how much you support. Warren, do you believe there has been a shift that the community's voice playing a role in regulatory bodies and industry that is working on new drug development in the HD space? If so, do you think that shift will play an important role in accelerating drug development in the future?
Yeah, I think we're seeing that shift now. And it's really great to see. One of the things that's been missing is the patient voice at the table. And yes, we've been saying things for years, but we're finally being heard, and we're finally being asked to come in and share those things. And absolutely, it's going to make a difference when it comes to because ultimately, nothing can move forward without us, right? And it's affecting us because these are our lives, and we have a right to speak up and say what matters to us and what's not working. You know, if you currently participate in a trial or study and you see something like this question doesn't apply whatsoever to my situation, you have the right to say that to somebody. And that's why meetings like what we're having with the FDA are so important, because they need to hear that. They need to hear the patient perspective. And this truly is our time to speak up. We are given the opportunity to have an offer in November, and we need to use it. We need to use that opportunity to speak up.
Final question, Melissa and Erica. Congratulations on your wedding a couple weeks ago. Do you find that HD has brought a different type of love and bond that you wouldn't have had if you both were not with someone impacted by HD? If so, what do you think that is? And how do you think you may think or feel a little different than a newly married
woman? I'm a new mentor HD, so I often say that HD takes a lot away from us, but it also gives us a lot. I was looking at our last interview video, which is what I used to propose to Erica. So that's too easy. Yeah. We both get to propose something like that. But I think that it's created a different kind of understanding, especially like when we make these promises to care for each other throughout life. We're making a promise to not only each other, but to each other's family, to our roles and our identities in this community. This is so much love, but that's all we really want to repay. And I think it just shapes our conversations differently. I don't think a lot of people go into marriage thinking like, all right, we got life insurance, we got the interactive, you know, we got all the stuff. You know, no one likes to think about that.
Hospital
things,
we got all this
conversation.
Yeah, Erica in the hospital. And she's got life insurance for quite a bit, and finally she got some. So anyway, our conversations were shaped differently around that, and we have to learn to. Like, we already know that we have a PhD on days. Whether I'm at 100 and Aaron's at 0, or we're both in 0, or both at 100, whatever the case may be, we really find time and space to balance that out, especially like feelings of loss surrounding PhD. For example, if I'm thinking about Aaron being at risk and bothering me, we have an agreement that we're going to acknowledge it. And Erica asks, is there anything that I can do for you in this moment? And for me, I just helps like say something out loud, and that helps me process it. And I'm like, okay, cheers, let's have a drink, let's go out for dinner, you know, something like that, and move on. So we're very clear about like, our thoughts and expectations surrounding HD and what that looks like for the future.
Yeah, I think it like sets up this like foundation that like, mm-hmm. Like tell everyone about HD, and like dating within like HD life can be very like complex, right? And when you tell, when you open up, when you're your parents, or whatever the case may be, when you talk about this, I think we right off the bat, it's like that level of like trust that we just like kind of immediately have. And then I don't know, we just like, I think we kind of take like some of the hardest discussions, some of the hardest things, and go, this is what we're going to talk about, this is what we stand for, this is what we're going to communicate to each other, and we're going to do it privately. So it's not like, you know, I think a lot of our age don't think about those kinds of things, and they're not necessarily conversation that we kind of have at the table, but they are dinner table conversations. It's like not all the time, but it just, and we just have this I don't know. I think it's just because of our love and like commitment for each other and for our improvement as well. So it's just security. I think we just feel more secure in it no matter what happens. Like, we'll look at each other.
I think that if both of our families and we have different family progression, different experience for the young people growing up with HD, like I think Carl Warren said this earlier, she's like, if you met one person with HD, you met one person with HD. And so although we have a lot of similarities, we have a lot of differences, and I think that we've been a gift to each other in teaching each other different levels of patience when it comes to dealing with a loved one in my family versus a loved one in her family. You know, lots of patients. And so I think it's been beautiful to see how we've been able to grow that. And like Erica said, it's really built a foundation for ourselves. Yeah.
Thank you all so much for the experience, y'all.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to visit www.help4hd.org and sign up for our email newsletter to stay up to date on all that is going on at Help for HD. Get social with us and like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and subscribe to Help for HD TV on YouTube, and ring the bell for notifications.